It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's a Wednesday here on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you. It is Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. We are rocking and rolling through the middle part of the week. It is a busy time of the year. We'll have Shreyas Lada in later in this hour to help us get ready for, KU's bye week. Not really getting ready for anything, but we'll take stock of where the Jayhawks sit following the Missouri game, how they look going into Big 12 play, which they'll begin the next time we see them play against West Virginia next week. We'll also talk Chiefs, get you ready to begin the preparations for the Eagles, and a little bit more on this Tyreek Hill situation. It's all what's on tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, now featuring the Pep Pep Pepperoni Pizza. It's topped with sliced, cubed, and deli-cut pepperoni. Pep Pep Pepperoni, now available in a lunch or full size at Wichita Brewing Company near you. Pizza and beer made here. All right, Tommy, we come back. Yesterday, we spent some time with the idea of trading for Tyreek Hill. Since we had that conversation, Hill has been accused of multiple instances of domestic violence. His estranged wife has done that as a part of divorce filings. These are accusations that Hill denies, his attorneys calling it a shakedown and a smear campaign. She claims 8 instances of domestic violence, some violent, like in nature. Look, Hill's going to get his day in court on this. It's a divorce. It's messy. Like, it would be one thing if this wasn't like the fifth time we've been dealing with this, with these kinds of accusations, with a conviction before in his past. Like, do the Chiefs, and look, if you watched The Kingdom, you know their philosophy on this stuff. Andy Reid, it was such a well-done episode, and it gives you some insight into how he feels about second chances and all these things, and I do love that. But man, I don't know about ninth chances, and I don't know that Hill did anything here. I'm not saying that he did or did not. The courts can decide that, but there's always something with him. And he is not the same player they put up with some of this for of the past. Did the Chiefs really want to go down this road and try to figure this out? Like, is this really where they need to turn their attention, where they need to spend their time, energy, and resources? Tyreek Hill would come to Kansas City. He'd be well received by the fans. We know all that stuff would happen. But what if any of this is true? Right? And I don't know that any of this is even being heard criminally. Right now, it's a part of a divorce proceeding, so I assume it's all civil.
I think that's the important distinction to make in all of this. And I'm not trying to downplay this. I'm not trying to whitewash it, erase it, whatever. This is not a criminal investigation. This is not anything that he has been charged with. This is not anything that he is going to court to potentially have some sort of penalty, you know, jail time or probation. Like, it's not criminal in nature. This is a part of a divorce proceeding, and who knows how nasty of a divorce proceeding this actually is. That being said, there is a long history of issues and situations with Tyreek Hill, and so it's probably pretty easy to connect the dots from point A to point B and have like a correlation causation type conversation about, well, you know, he did it in the past and he was convicted or what, like whatever. So clearly, like, where there's smoke, there's fire. Like, I can understand that conversation and the perception. Perception is reality in today's world and all of that. But let's be very, very, very clear, and let's be fair to Tyreek Hill in this. He is not being criminally charged in this. These are allegations that were made in a divorce proceeding with, from what I can tell and from what I've read, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but from what I'm, what I've read, it's not like these eight instances that were documented in the divorce proceedings, there were any kind of, there was any kind of police interaction. Right. There was any kind of charges that were filed. There was any kind of protection order or arrest, or there was none of that from what I, from what I can tell. Right.
And he's been a part of shakedowns in the past.
He has. So I think, I think it's extremely important in this particular situation to make sure that that context is out there as well.
It's the context is everything when we're talking about the situation specifically. I agree. And he has been victim. It might be the wrong word, but he's been on the wrong end of this type of thing before. But he's also done some pretty terrible things.
Yeah, he's not put himself in a good position in a lot of cases.
Like, and I'm not trying to say that. Like, I'm not making any opinion on Hill here. I'm just, as the situation is out there and you're the Chiefs, it's a conversation you're going to have. It's a conversation you're going to have with fans. It's a conversation you're going to have with the media. He's older. He's not as productive. And he's expensive. And so when you look at the challenges the Chiefs face currently with the Xavier Worthy injury, I think that you have to consider that stuff when you think about going and making a move like that. It's going to be expensive. It's going to be a tough move to make anyway. Is this a check in the column that says, you know what, let's not go down that road? I don't know. I don't know if it is or not. They obviously gave Kareem Hunt a second chance. I don't think they'd have any problem giving Tyreek Hill a second chance. But this situation exists. And there have been other situations since he's left Kansas City, some of which he has been in no trouble for, some of which have been settled, like, you know, whatever. Like, it's just always something, right? It's never just like, we're just going to quietly handle our business here. Kareem Hunt, quiet. Like, no, like, you know, he had his terrible moment in time. He is sort of the poster boy for Andy Reid's philosophy. Everything's been all quiet with him, I think. Since his situation that had him released the first time, redemption story, all those things. Michael Vick, if you go all the way back, Michael Vick obviously learned from his experiences and by all accounts has become a much better person through them. Andy Reid, second chance, all makes sense, right? This one hasn't been as quiet since Hill's been gone. So that's just something to consider is all I'm saying. I'm not trying to convict Hill of anything. I'm just saying the situation's out there. We're reading about it every day now. Like, it's there. It's something to consider if you're the Chiefs and you want to go and potentially, again, there's nothing solid on a trade, but it is a trade that could make a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. But it's all something to think about when you're talking about Tyreek Hill. But boy, that and then that begs the question that we'll get to in the next segment. How badly do they need to do something? And how badly and how desperate for this year do they need to be? And can they get where they're trying to go through these murky waters of this, what's sure to be this early season? That's the, you know, in Tyreek Hill's case, that's a $30 million question.
Yeah, I think that it's appropriate in a situation like this, and really in any situation in the NFL, for the team and the front office to do their due diligence on a guy before they trade for him. That is totally standard, totally fine. And part of that due diligence would be something like this. The eight allegations of domestic violence against his estranged wife as he's going through divorce proceedings with this person. That absolutely falls inside the parameters of doing due diligence on a player before you trade for him, before you bring him back into your organization. The Chiefs have done their due diligence on Tyreek Hill. They've done that multiple times over the course of his career. They drafted him and brought him into their organization when he had had issues prior to him even entering the league. He was kicked off his college football team. Like, there have been, these things have existed for a long time, and that has not precluded the Chiefs from bringing him in. Would they do it again? I think that that is up in the air. And I don't think it's necessarily just because of this particular situation. There are a lot of reasons why.
There are football reasons.
There are football reasons why. There are contractual reasons why. There are financial reasons why. And then there's this. I think it's fair to say that it ends up on the list as they're doing due diligence and as they're weighing the pros and cons. It's not the top of the list, but it certainly is on the list.
Yeah, it is. And it, and just so that's out there. As we talk about that, don't want people saying, well, you're ignoring the fact that no, we're not. We're not. It's there, just like it's there for the Chiefs to evaluate. And the Chiefs may not be interested in this anyway. So we'll get into all of it when we come back. We'll look at the Eagles game. We'll continue to kind of look at this first six games. And we want to know what a lot of people talked about at the fair yesterday, Tommy. It's what happens right now for the Chiefs. And are they going to be okay? And what do we think? And it's like it's a complicated question. I mean, it's a very different scenario than we imagined just a month ago that is facing the Chiefs now. We've only played one game, but it's a different situation than we thought it would be a month ago, like vastly different for a bunch of different reasons. So we'll get into all of it. What do they need to do against the Eagles? How do you attack this game individually in this stretch of time where you're going to be thin? We'll get into that. We've got Shreyas Lotta coming up later this hour. Looking forward to all of it. If you want to win some HTO, you can do that right now. Text keyword T to the short code 20357. That's T to 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Get your hands on the new Caramel Apple Sweet Tea. It is available. This coupon will be good at East Wichita, West Wichita Derby. Good luck, everybody. We'll come back. Chiefs Eagles. We'll begin to preview it next.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. It's Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here on a Wednesday. Glad to be with you, getting you ready for the back half of the week. That means preparations for the Chiefs to play what we'll look back on as one of the bigger games they'll play all season. In fact, over the next month, they'll play a lot of those games, and they happen to come when the Chiefs are limping a little bit to start the season. You know, it wasn't that long ago, Tommy, where we thought, okay, all of those things that, you know, really presented themselves as problems for the Chiefs last year, having to go sign guys off the street, make in-season trades to try and piece together a bad injury situation. Well, they're already here. It's week. We've played 1 week of football, and the Chiefs are without their two top wide receivers. And we look at an offense that it is right, I think, to have some questions about when, you know, when it's really, you could make a case that they're down three of their four perceived top receivers, depending on what you think about Jalen Royals, even as a rookie that we haven't seen really play any football. But from what we thought we would have coming in, they're missing three of their top four wide receivers. Hollywood Brown is still there. Juju is an old man now, but he knows the offense, right? That's what we're clinging on to. A guy who missed all season last year, basically because of injury, and an older player who has been a Band-Aid for this organization for, 3 years now? And old Travis Kelce, who I think still has plenty left in the tank. It is going to be a tough stretch of games until they, well, depending on when Worthy comes back, even when he comes back with a separated shoulder or whatever it is that he has, it's going to be tough. They're going to have to reinvent the offense before they ever got a chance to reinvent the offense.
What do we know about Andy Reid and the front office? They don't panic on things. They don't make knee-jerk reactions. They don't go and, you know, try to...
I would say they're very realistic, right? They knew they needed to do something last year. They went and they got Kareem Hunt. That wasn't knee-jerk. It wasn't panic. It was realistic. They were realistic when they went and got DeAndre Hopkins last year. They looked at it and they said, that's not going to be enough. They're saying right now that they have enough. Whether they believe that or not, I think is a really interesting question.
Yeah, and I think that, and I've seen people that have immediately resorted to, you know, going back to what they did with Kareem Hunt and DeAndre Hopkins and drawing comparisons to this situation. They're two totally different things, because you're talking about short-term temporary fixes, because Rashee Rice will be back after six games. Xavier Worthy, by all accounts, should be back sometime soon. At some point, right? They didn't know if they would have Hollywood Brown at all for the remainder of the season. Right. They knew they were going to be without Rashee Rice for all of the season last year with his torn ACL. They knew that these were like either season-ending injuries or long-term, no guarantee that they'll be back type injuries. Isaiah Pacheco was on the shelf for what, 10 weeks or 11 weeks? Like, they were long-term injuries last season, and they knew they had to go out and get some reinforcements, and that's what they did with Kareem Hunt and DeAndre Hopkins. This is a different situation because you're dealing with guys that by all accounts should be back relatively soon, that 4 to 6 week type, you know, time frame, depending on the Rashee Rice suspension. Obviously, that's, you know, five more games, and then we don't know about Xavier Worthy, but they're not going to go and be knee-jerk and go make a major trade or go and sign somebody off the street if they feel like we're going to be just fine in a few weeks from now and we can sort of hodgepodge together our wide receiver room to get us by until then.
And look, it's I 100% agree. It is not the same thing as last year. It's a very different situation. The line is better. They're healthy at running back, which they were not last year right now. If we go back and we evaluate what they need to do in this time, it will be to run the ball. The Cowboys ran the ball moderately effectively. Now, granted, Carter did leave the game, and that's something to, you know, to make note of. But the Cowboys, they broke off a big run, which is of note. They had an okay time running the ball. It was one of the more effective things that they did in the game. They had 120 yards rushing in the game. Philadelphia's secondary has been very good. I think when we look at games right now in this short term, I don't think the solution for the Chiefs will be to try and, you know, fit a square peg into a round hole. You're down pass catchers right now, big time. You are healthy at running back. You're facing a team that annihilated Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. You're facing a team that the Cowboys, with a far less talented backfield, were able to just run the ball effectively. The answer to the Eagles, and maybe the answer to the first 6 weeks, will be to run the ball. Not, you know. And
I laugh because you're not wrong. But I'm not going to sit here and get my hopes up they're going to do that.
But Tommy, even if they just what I'm saying, and I know they're not going to turn around and be a run dominant offense, but if they'll just run it to the clip they were forced to run it in parts of last season, it was happening. It wasn't at the end of the season because they started to get pass catchers back and they started to throw it again. It was kind of that middle part of the season where they were really just trying to, they were winning all these games. That's the ridiculous part of all of this. But when they were trying to band-aid it to the end of the season, just to that clip, like, can we see collectively 25 carries to the running backs in this game? I don't know. I think that's
aggressive.
It usually takes them more time to get there. But this is a game specifically where that also makes sense. So it's not just like a personnel issue or like last year where it was a we can't pass block issue and Patrick Mahomes is getting creamed. It's not just that now. It's we're playing a team where that may be the way to play them anyway. How do you slow down a great offense when your defense didn't look great in week one? You play ball control. Right? How did Army beat K-State? They controlled the ball. How can you beat that great Philadelphia offense and protect your defense a little bit? Control the ball. Patrick Mahomes is going to run this year. I mean, he showed us that in week one. It's going to happen. So if that's a part of it too, pick up first downs, control the clock, run the ball a little bit. You've got Pacheco. Let's see what Elijah Mitchell has. Let's see what he's got. Like, give him some carries. Whatever it is, there are going to have to be ways outside of what they did last year because they don't need to do that stuff. To your point, they're going to have their pass options back before the halfway point of the season, most likely. So these are temporary issues against an insanely difficult schedule through the first six games.
Counterpoint on that. I think 25 carries collectively is high. I think more than likely, probably what we'll see is, I don't know, 15 maybe. And then the remainder of the 10 that are not being handed off to ball carriers, you're going to see more dink and dump offense, you know, and in the pass game. You're going to see dump offs to Breshard Smith, which I think I would love. I would love to see him, you know, be able to break a couple off, you know, from the backfield where he's catching them, you know, in the pass game. You're going to see, you know, some really short passes, maybe slant routes over the middle by Juju Smith-Schuster. You're going to see a lot of what we saw a season ago. They might ramp up the running game a notch, but I think 25, as much as I think that would be ideal.
Yeah, it was 10 against the Chargers, by the way.
I think going from 10 to 25 would be shocking. I would be surprised by that.
I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it should. Now, the only
it might be a modest increase. It might be like a 15.
When you play a team like the Eagles, the challenge is if it doesn't work early, it can get away from you, and then you can't do it. So, you know, like perfect game script, if we're looking at it, to me would be when you can absolutely script those first, you know, the first drive or two, throw it around a little bit. That's great. I've got no problem with that. But man, when you get into the second quarter and late in the game, if the game is close, that's where I think running the ball becomes paramount for the Chiefs. They don't need to come out of the gates and just say, all right, we're going to run it three times and to hell with what the results are. No, that's not going to work against the Eagles because probably they're going to score some points. So it's got to be nuanced a little bit. This is a challenging game for the Chiefs. It is a very challenging game for the Chiefs. They're home underdogs. They're never home underdogs. It's a bad matchup. It's especially a bad matchup when you consider the injuries the Chiefs face right now. So we'll see. And then it's a game against the Giants on the road. And then it's the Ravens. And then it's a road trip to Jacksonville, who looked very good in week one. And then it's back home to face Detroit. And then hopefully the Chiefs get their weapons back in some of the other insanely difficult games that they play this year, which are all but like three games. They'll be closer to full strength, and then we can get a real feel for this thing. We talked about it yesterday. Are we going to feel good, Tommy, if we get to week seven when they're back closer to full strength? I mean, I would feel great about 3-3. Are we going to feel good about 2-4?
I mean, it could very easily spiral away, you know, so
2-4.
I don't know. Here's the thing. I think that, you know, everybody rightfully so is focused on the lack of personnel offensively. I mentioned this yesterday on the show. How are they going to execute an offense with the loss of Rice and potentially not having Worthy for a while and whatever that looks like? At the end of the day, what I'm most concerned about, not only this coming week against Jalen Hurts, but over the next few games is, man, how are they defensively going to be able to lock down?
Because at the end of the day,
Justin Herbert ran all over the Chiefs defense in that week one game. He was outstanding. It's a little bit terrifying to know that you're going up against Jalen Hurts and then 2 weeks from now, Lamar Jackson. You have got to contain the quarterback. You've got to contain him and make him beat you with his arm, both Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson in that regard. And, you know, they're both good passing quarterbacks as well, but you can't let them run all over you. And they let Justin Herbert run all over them in week one. And so we can, I think it's the easy conversation to have to talk about, well, man, offensively, what are they going to do? And they don't have pass catchers and they're down three of their four top guys and blah, 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 blah. There were some glaring issues defensively in that week one game against the Chargers. They've got to get shored up, or I think that's the more likely reason why they end up 2-4 after their first six games, not because of a lack of pass catching, but because defensively they've been leaky.
I agree. I totally agree. But that's been a threat all year. My anticipation and proclamation on this season is that they're going to go back to just outscoring people more often than shutting them down the way they have the last 2 years. Yes, the challenge, Jalen Hurts is not in the same stratosphere as Lamar Jackson as a passer, in my opinion. Jalen Hurts is good when he's efficient, and yes, when he's running. Philadelphia is going to try to run the ball. So is Baltimore, by the way. When you have Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, and those quarterbacks, of course you're going to try to run the ball. And that's where it has to start for the Chiefs. They must make Jalen Hurts beat them through the air. They cannot let Saquon Barkley beat them, and they cannot let Jalen Hurts run on them. Jalen Hurts doesn't, He's not going to just break him up. Now he has, but I don't think that's what he wants to do. I think he wants to be a point guard out there, and he's very good at that. But yeah, you can't let him run, and you also have to stop Saquon Barkley. If they can do those things, then Spags can tee off a little bit, maybe on some of their deficiencies. And Jalen Hurts is, you know, if you can make Jalen Hurts try to throw it on you, I think you're in much better shape. And Spags will dial that up. But you're right. If they can't stop the run, they're not, because Philadelphia will run it as long as they can run it. They're, you know, they'd be happy to just turn around and hand the ball off 30 times. So yeah, that's and here's where the challenge comes in now with the injuries. What if they can't stop them? What if they can't stop Baltimore? This defense right now, whether it gets there with the young players, it's going to have to elevate or not right now. And it's not the same defense. And so if they can't stop them at a high clip, can this version of the offense keep up with that? That's why, to me, this is so daunting through these first 6 weeks, because I don't think the defense is going to be able to shut these teams down. And when that happens, they're far less equipped right now to keep up with them. When they're fully healthy, give me the Chiefs offense, right? When I know Worthy and Rice, and we'll see what Royals is, but with Kelsey, and like, heck yeah, give me that offense. I'll take that offense to war against anybody. That ain't the offense they have right now. It's just not. So where do you balance it out? That's why I say, like, when, and this is all in reference to the Eagles more specifically this week. If the Chiefs can get a run game established, it allows them to control what direction this game is headed. And that's about the only way I can see them getting it done against this team, is controlling the tempo, the narrative of the game, the style of the game. What's the over-under on this game? Let me take a look at that, because it feels like an under game to me. 47, that's a little lower than I would have anticipated. But it does, like, I think both teams would love to play ball control offense in this game. It feels like an under game to me, as great as both of these offenses have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think that because of knowing that ball control is going to be an essential part of it, and I don't agree that it's going to be primarily through, like, on the ground. I think it should be, but I don't think that's in Andy Reid's MO.
I don't know that I think it will be. I just think it should be.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that that's got to be a key part of it, is to keep the ball away from Philly. They have so many weapons, and what you can't allow to have happen to you on the flip side is you can't allow Philly to control the time of possession. You can't allow Saquon,
which is what they want to do.
Right. You can't allow Saquon to get a bunch of carries and just, like, kill you death by a thousand paper cuts. Like, that's not a recipe for success for Kansas City. There are, I know I always relate, like, I sometimes relate different things back to poker, but, and you're looking at, like, the different outs you've got, a different paths to win the game. I think Philly has a lot more outs to win this game than Kansas City does. I think Philly can win this game in a couple of different ways. It maybe two or three different ways. I think Kansas City has one clear path. You have to keep the ball away from the Eagles. You have to control the tempo, control the time of possession. You have to make sure that you're not falling behind early. You have to make sure that you are staying competitive in the game down the stretch so you can continue to execute your strategy. The worst possible scenario for Kansas City is they fall behind early and then Philly controls the ball. And then whenever the Chiefs get the ball back, they're trying to throw it to win. I don't think that's the recipe for success for the Chiefs this weekend.
Now, I agree. What if that happens? Like, if they can't, and if they have to throw the ball, it's still Mahomes. Can they do it? And that'll be the really interesting test for this offense, I think. I don't think the Chiefs want to do that. I don't think they want to have to do it, but they might have to. And if they have to, can they get that done? That's what we'll find out on Sunday. It's a fascinating game, man. We're going to have to pick it at the end of the week. I can't imagine I'll talk myself into the Chiefs in this one. And I really want to be proven wrong on that. I really want to see. I don't know where it's going to come from. It'll come from Kelsey a little bit. Other than that, like, I don't know who's going to surprise us. Maybe, as Joshua Briscoe alluded to, it's a deep shot to Tyquan Thornton. you know, maybe it's Hollywood Brown handling another 16 targets. It's just like, what are they going to do with this game if they get down two scores in this game? All right, we'll come back. We've got Shreyas Lada next. He's going to join us. We'll talk about KU football against Missouri and look ahead to the Big 12. That's next. Stay tuned.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Shreyas Lada. No Hawaiian. We are ready to get you through a week. Shreyas, it is, it feels soon to have a bye week, doesn't it? Just a couple weeks in. I know this is normal. It just feels that way. I think even after the Mizzou game, people are generally got to be pretty excited. I think maybe more so than before the year, more confident that KU looks pretty good. What's been your take on the Jayhawks through 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think they're
three weeks.
Yeah, I think they're a pretty talented team. They've shown a lot of promise, you know, first two games especially. And, you know, at points of the Missouri game, they looked like they were in total control. Obviously, didn't go the way Kansas fans wanted or Kansas team wanted. But, you know, I think Lance Leipold said it best. There's a lot of season left. And now Big 12 play starts next week, and, you know, they play West Virginia, then they play Cincinnati, UCF. You know, you want to go into the Texas Tech game, which is in a couple of weeks, hopefully with no more losses. That's ideal, you know, contending for a Big 12 title. But I think there's a real possibility of that with this Kansas team. Obviously, you know, unforeseen circumstances can happen, but, you know, Jalen Daniels has played his best ball in a long time. And I think that's going to win you a lot of football games.
We got to go back to the Missouri game, Shreyas. The Jayhawks got off to a blistering hot start in that game, at one point leading 21-6. And it looked like, okay, Kansas is going to be able to do this in hostile territory and taking down their bitter rivals. Missouri showed why they are a really talented football team. But what was your major takeaway from at least the start that Kansas showed in that game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a tremendous response to a hostile crowd. I think it was the atmosphere was fantastic just being there. I was a big fan of that, how both teams clearly hate each other. But I was looking pretty impressed, you know, like you go into a road environment like that and you can get out to a 21-6 lead. It seemed like they were in complete control of the game until they weren't, of course. But I was just impressed that, you know, it was even a possibility for Kansas to be up that big, you know, because I think previous Kansas teams over the last few years, or really the last decade and a half, probably wouldn't be in a position to be 21-6 on Missouri.
Yeah, I have a hard time evaluating that game. Mm-hmm. I love that KU was in it to the end. Man, they Missouri just moved the ball so much more than KU in the game, and I don't know what that means. Like, I don't know if I should be looking at, like, look at what KU did even despite that, or the fact that it happened, and it's like, is that a concern down the road that if that happens, they won't be close in these games?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a difficult thing. The one thing that worries me is, and I wrote about this after the game, is when key decisions are made, you know, at the end of halves or near the end of the game, I have a little bit of a concern that the offense tends to go a little conservative. I thought that was a Jeff Grimes issue. I think it's not, as we've seen against Missouri. I think Lance Leipold can learn from this, but I think for me, watching the end of the second half, watching the end of the game, I felt like I was watching shades of last year's team. I don't really understand it because, yes, I understand being conservative last year when Jalen Daniels was having a rough year, rough start, whatever. This year, he's off to his best start he's had in a long time. He was the only reason there on that Missouri game. Yes, Kansas fans can say the safety was bad. Yes, the fumble was bad. Whatever. Okay, not great. But he was dealing against a tough Missouri defense. He had to deal with a good amount of drops. And to not play with any sense of urgency in the end of the first half, to me, that just you're giving up. I don't care what your, you know, like mindset is. Zabrowski is not afraid to do, you know, take going fourth downs other times. Why not go for it, or, you know, at least have better clock management there? And then at the end of the game, when they're down, you know, I think it was 4 or something, you know, and they have to punt the ball. I thought that was incredibly, you know, it's 4th and 7, you know, Emmanuel Henderson just misses a catch. I thought that was incredibly not the right decision. I know analytics will be like, oh my God, there's only 1%, but this defense hasn't been able to stop a nosebleed all game. They can't stop the run game. They've been on the field 2-1 by the end of the game. And semantics wise, I just don't understand it. You know, I feel like you're playing scared. And Jalen Daniels is a 6-year quarterback. Daniel Hyshaw is a 6-year running back. You can't play scared with who you have on offense personnel. Like, you have to trust that they are going to put you in a position to win. I think if I was a Kansas fan, that's the thing that irritates me the most, is it feels like they haven't learned anything from last year's debacle.
There was that stretch of the game, Sharius, where, you know, towards the end of the first half, Missouri absolutely controlled the ball. You had, I think it was, what, 30 out of 31 plays were ran by Missouri. They had a long, sustained offensive drive that resulted in points. The very first play was that turnover safety from Jalen Daniels, and then Missouri goes on another long, sustained drive to basically end the half and walk away with points there, too. And it seemed to me, I mean, number one, that's a momentum killer. But number two, for the Jayhawks, you end up going into the second half, kind of playing on your heels a little bit, going back to what you had talked about with playing scared.
No, 100%. And I think so much of it was just bad clock management. Like, you know, they had the ball, I think, with 56 seconds, and they didn't even manage to, like, waste 30 seconds. Hyshaw made a monumental error, you know, going out of bounds and stopping the clock. Like, that's just – I mean, you can't do that. I'm sorry. You're a 6-year running back. That's unacceptable. I don't care what it is. And Lance Leipold said as much, basically, after the game, because, you know, Lance is not the one to shade his players or throw him under the bus, but that was probably as explicit I've seen Lance be, you know, where, like, you know, we have to teach him better. And I'm like, what do you have to teach him better? He's a 6-year running back. Like, know the situational awareness to not be out of bounds. And you give up, you punt the ball 28 seconds, and Missouri has 2 big plays, and they almost score a touchdown. They put themselves in position to be in the red zone. They almost score a touchdown, but they don't. And then you end up with 3, going to the half, giving up 15 straight points. You're reeling. They have to kick the ball off. Obviously, it's going to be a tough position for Kansas to be in. I just didn't like that entire sequence the last 2 minutes. And to me, that felt like so much of what we watched last year in the first 6 games, where they gave up a ton of 1-score games. And I don't know. I'd like to think this is a learning moment and this is something they can learn from, but I thought they would have learned from last year and we wouldn't be talking about the same thing over and over and over again.
Let's talk about the run game. You've talked a lot about Hyshaw. Through 2 games against 2 cupcakes, it looked pretty effective. And then against Missouri, it was almost literally non-existent. So which is it? You know, what's closer to the truth, do you think, as we get ready for Big 12 play?
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap. And I really feel like, you know, since, you know, Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say World Wide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I think it's a pretty good run game for the most part, but Missouri is just more talented, more athletic on the line, and it showed. They could get holds open. And no disrespect to Daniel Hyshaw or LeSean Williams, but they're not Devin Neal. You know, I think Devin Neal would have been able to make some things more happen against that Tigers defense, especially as a receiver, you know, as some screens, et cetera. That was the one thing I was a little surprised about, is Kansas didn't use a little more screens with the running backs. You know, LeSean Williams would have been, I think, if you're not going to get the traditional run game going, then at least, you know, maybe do something there. But, you know, it was a little disappointing if you were a Kansas fan, because there was so much on Jalen Daniels' shoulders that game. 31 rushing yards, you know, total all game. They had 2 at halftime. I think Hyshaw ended up with 6 rushing yards and 11 carries. That's unacceptable. That's just not good enough. And that's, like, worrying to me, because what happens when they play a team like Texas Tech, which is athletic, which is big, You know, is that same thing going to repeat itself where Jalen Daniels feels like he has to play hero ball, where he feels like he has to carry the load? I think they're going to be fine for most of conference play, but there are certain games that I'm like, okay, that run defense could cause some issues for this offensive line.
Obviously, we go into the bye week, and you mentioned the three teams they have coming up as they kick off Big 12 play. West Virginia is down at the bottom of the Big 12 right now. The honeymoon stage is over for Rich Rodriguez, as they did not look good at all. I agree with you. I feel like the Jayhawks should enter into the Texas Tech game at 5-1. In your mind, what's the number one priority that the Jayhawks have to focus on in this bye week to be able to get to a point to where they're 5-1?
Yeah, I think the big thing is situational awareness, you know, game planning. You know, I think clock management is something that's going to be big, because let's call it what it is. If things go the way they're supposed to go, Kansas should not be threatened by West Virginia, right? They should win this game. So I think the big thing is, you know, is there, you know, more two-minute drills they can do to get them ready for end of halves? Is there more that they can do, you know, that when there are close games, they're going to be more prepared? I think that's going to be something big. I think obviously the defense needs to bounce back after a pretty horrendous outing versus Missouri. Like, that was probably the worst they're going to have all year defensively, especially against the run game. I think, you know, having Bengali Kamara fully healthy again will be big. You know, he played, but he was hurt still. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they look against West Virginia, because, like, if this is a team that we think is as good as they look, they should be pretty dominant against West Virginia. Like, this should be they should win by 10 points type of game.
Yeah, well, and we'll have plenty of time to look at them more specifically next week, Shreyas. We appreciate it. Go follow all of Shreyas's work at the KC Star. Follow him on X at SHRE98. Shreyas, we appreciate it. Enjoy the bye week, and we'll be ready to rock and roll into the Big 12 next week.
Well, absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
There goes Shreyas Lotta. Good stuff. We'll see with KU. I do think they need to run the ball. I'm a little concerned about the output there when we're talking about Missouri. It's just such a big part of what they've been doing offensively for a long time. Of course, Devin Neal helps. Devin Neal now of the NFL. But we'll see. We've got more time to talk about it next week. Hey, thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every day here on Sports Daily. Thanks to Crestview Country Club, great supporter of the program.
It's Boomer and Geo, mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fall golf season is here. It's been a minute, Tommy, since we've played. We got to get out there soon. It's chaos week for 3 weeks here for me, and then I'll be ready. It might be a little chilly. You like that. I'm not quite as much, but
I'm in on that. I love it when there's a chill in the air to go and play some golf.
We'll get a little October golf in there, but Crestview's got all kinds of fun stuff happening right now. It is a great time to give them a call and see what kind of packages that they're offering. Always different things happening there. Give them a call. Ask them about the different memberships. You'd be surprised at how many different kinds there are for the golfers and for the non-golfers. Tell them we sent you. We're both proud to be out there and having fun all the time. So I appreciate their support here.
Hey, real quick before we go to break, we would be remiss to not mention, I know you're not going to be on the show tomorrow, but tomorrow is the 25th anniversary of Sports Daily. Can you believe that?
Really?
25. So you're going to miss the 25th anniversary show. That's okay. But it's the 25th anniversary of this program here on KFH.
That is fantastic. I will be out tomorrow. I believe TJ is in for me tomorrow. I keep missing all of Glasser's betting insight. He nailed it in week one. I assume he did fine last week too, but that'll be tomorrow. Tim Fitzgerald. Don't go away. We got more Sports Daily coming up.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap. And I really feel like, you know, since, Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say World Wide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.